Washington, D.C. editor Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Janine Etter and Carla West. Our theme music was composed and produced for FSRN by Alan Weatherhead. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit our website, fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FSRN. Thanks for listening in Los Angeles. I'm Dorian Marina.
WMPG is on the air thanks to listener donations and generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu.
Blunt wishes to thank all of the following sponsors and partners: the A.R. Gould School at Long Creek Youth Development Center, the Filene Foundation, Terrascope Youth Radio at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Youth Radio from Youth Media International in Oakland, California, and Blunt is also funded in part by a grant from the Maine Arts Commission, an independent state agency funded by the National Endowment for the Arts.
The views expressed on Blunt are those of the individual speakers and producers and not those of the University of Southern Maine or WMPG management. Blunt Youth Radio welcomes opposing views.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to die for them too. Especially the weather.
Portland is the local hub for food, entertainment, and art.
The city is evolving as a foodie town and has received national recognition for its many quirky restaurants and local dishes.
Portland has begun to attract many big-name musicians. However, it still remains welcoming for an abundance of local artists and bands that embody a wide range of different musical genres.
The city of Portland is the largest city in the state of Maine, and many organizations work toward making Portland a safe community, offering resources for its hungry and impoverished.
Tonight on Blunt, we will be speaking with several members of the Portland community who all contribute to the cultural infrastructure of our city.
This is a call-in show. The number is 780-4909.
You're listening to Blunt Youth Radio, award-winning youth-produced radio since 1994.
Chris Busby is the editor and publisher of The Bollard and a columnist for the Bangor Daily News. The Bollard is a monthly magazine about local news, music, and food.
So, hi, Chris.
Hello. Sorry about that.
We were having a little bit of mic troubles, but we're all set now.
Perfect. Yeah. Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks. So, Chris, what is it about Portland that inspires you to produce The Bollard and write your weekly blog?
Well, you know, there's a lot going on in this city for sure, and there's a lot of interesting characters. There's definitely a lot happening politically, a lot of decisions that are made, like by the city council and the school board and our state legislators that are interesting. So there's really no shortage of things to write about here, and, you know, I just love the city. I love Portland, and I want to do something local. You know, I don't really, you know, I'm not really that interested in covering national or international affairs. I want to do something about my own community. And I feel like the Bollard fills a void in terms of providing stories that you don't find in the other media around town. So I want there to be this kind of independent voice talking about interesting stories in Portland that otherwise wouldn't get heard.
Cool. I know that lately there's been a lot of talk, I don't know, in high school definitely, but I don't know, on a national level even, that Portland has become quote-unquote, a hipster town. I don't know if you can consider that a positive thing or not, but do you see Portland as being hip, or do you, and what does that mean?
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of a hipster town. It definitely attracts, you know, hipsters and artists. A lot of people refer to artists as kind of like hipsters. People who are into music tend to be categorized as hipsters. And the art and music scenes in Portland are both really tremendous. There's no shortage of galleries and places to see art and things to do around that. The music scene is huge. You know, I think there could certainly be more underage or all-age venues. But you know, that being said, we have an incredibly strong music scene, so it attracts a lot of people who are musicians and artists. And, you know, I think, I don't think, you know, nationally speaking, we're really that hip. You know, I made a reference to this in a recent BDN column saying that, you know, we're kind of always behind the times, you know, like maybe 2 years behind every trend, you know. So we're not on the cutting edge, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. But it's definitely a hip city. It's a city where there's a lot of young people.
Yeah. Portland definitely has a stark contrast to the rest of Maine. It's one of the biggest cities, and it definitely has a really thriving art community, with like Mecca, the art school, and a lot of galleries. How long have you lived in Portland, and what kind of changes have you seen?
Well, I moved to Portland in 1998, and I lived on Munjoy Hill at the time, and I still live there now. I've lived several places in between, but Munjoy Hill has changed quite a bit. There are a lot of the hip, trendy, kind of unfortunately also kind of pricier restaurants that have moved into the neighborhood. When I lived here in 1998, none of those existed. You know, there's a couple like convenience stores. Colucci's, which recently had the fire, was still there. Mm. But yeah, we've seen a lot of the hill has changed in that sense. A lot of kind of hip new restaurants, coffee shop, which is great. Finally, we can get good coffee on the hill. You know, that was a problem before. But Portland is growing, has just continued to grow, and we're seeing a huge growth spurt right now. Just, as you see, there's construction all over town, new hotels going up right and left, new house apartment buildings and so forth. A huge project plan for Bayside that'll bring thousands of people into the city. So I mean, there's a ton of stuff going on, and it's changed it's changing a lot right now. There have been some lulls, of course, with the economy, but over the last 15 years, it's really built out.
Yeah, I know that you wrote an article about the Tommy's Point construction that's going to be done.
And oh, yeah, Thompson's Point.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that that's kind of, in some ways, can be pretty negative in terms of the prime practice space for musicians. Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, that cover story from April was about this huge development that's apparently is going to go forward. It had been stalled for like a couple of years, but it's a new home for the Red Claws basketball team. They're going to have a hotel, an office building, numerous office buildings, a restaurant, a sports medicine facility, this huge like campus. So it's almost like a little mini peninsula. And there's a legendary music rehearsal space, formerly known as Prime Artists, and now known as Grime Studios, where, you know, so many of the great local bands, you know, like really learned how to play together in that space. And that is scheduled for demolition, but there's a bright side of the story in that the young people who have taken over Grime Studios are working with one of the developers, whose name is Chris Thompson, no relation. He's a Mecca professor, among other things, and also a hotel developer, but he's been working with them to find them a new space in that area somewhere. And from what I understand, things are looking good. I believe the things are on the right track for that to happen, and hopefully they'll be able to get another space.
So there's definitely, what I've heard is that there's a real struggle to find housing in Portland now because it's hard to find an apartment, it's hard to find, I mean, there's so many people who are trying to move in. So when trying to build new places and kind of like expand the city of Portland, do you think that would hinder the local bands or local kind of like traditional things that are going on, like the music scene? Or I know Maine itself is kind of a state that's a lot more like focused on traditions and kind of
you know.
Yeah, no, I think having more people come and live in the city will only help the scene, you know, especially getting more people out to shows. And as I mentioned before, you know, especially for this program, there really does need to be more all-ages shows. I think people who are under 21 should be allowed to go into clubs, get your hand stamped or whatever, but be able to see the music you want to see locally. That would be a huge help, you know, just yeah. in terms of bringing people out. But no, I don't think it would hinder the scene to have, you know, more people coming in necessarily. I think it really would be a positive. Yeah.
Cool. I know that I've been reading the series That's My Dump, and which you write, and it focuses on uninhabited buildings. And I was wondering how you first got started in doing that. And
yeah. When I first moved to town in 1998, I worked for a weekly paper called Casco Bay Weekly. And they had done some features years before I was there about properties, particularly in the Parkside neighborhood, that were in bad state. And they would kind of find out who the landlord was, what's the story, and so forth. So I had heard about that feature at the time in the late 90s. And then when I started the Bollard in 2005, I knew that was the sort of feature that I wanted to develop in the magazine. So I initially got that idea from the days working for a local alternative news weekly.
Just so you know, this is a call-in show. Call us at 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. And we're speaking to Chris Busby. He's the editor and publisher of The Bollard, which is a monthly magazine about local news, music, and food here in Portland. So, Chris, with your article, That's My Dump, how do you access the information on the buildings, and how do you choose which buildings to do? What interests you about specific ones?
It's really one of our most popular features of the magazine is That's My Dump. And we do get a lot of tips. A lot of people will tell us about properties. Occasionally it's me just driving by something. But, you know, I'd say probably more often than not, it's a tip from somebody. And there are various ways to find out who owns a property. One of the ways is the city's property tax records, and you can look up properties on the city's website, portlandmaine.gov. You go to the tax assessor's section. You can type in any address, and you can find out who owns it, what it's worth, what the taxes on it are. You know, there's some good dirt in there. You can find further things with the registry of deeds at the county level and do that. Their website is also pretty good. It's searchable. And then, you know, you start talking to neighbors. You talk to the city councilor oftentimes who represents that neighborhood. Sometimes they know what's going on. That's how you kind of piece things together.
Sounds mystery work.
It is. It's a little bit. It's, you know, it's kind of like investigating. And, you know, sometimes people, like this particular month, we talked to a building owner who was glad to talk to us and, you know, willing to say, hey, you know, I've just been busy and, you know, that's how things got the way. But, you know, I'd say, again, more times than not, they don't want to talk to us, you know, and that's fine, too. We note that. But yeah, that's sometimes you can get the owner to give you the history, too.
Yeah, I was wondering about what your kind of favorite story that you found or your favorite house, like, that has drawn the most interest for you.
Wow. You know, there was one just recently over by, I think it's Borealis Breads near on Ocean Avenue. The house had actually caught fire, and it was just a shell of itself for, you know, a long time. And we wrote a story about it, did a That's My Dump about it. And subsequent to that, I was speaking with Mayor Mike Brennan, and he said that he had been in discussions with the city attorney after having read this particular That's My Dump and saying, is there a way we can have a law that we can, you know, enforce the condition of these properties and so forth? So they had been working on that. And then just the other day I drove by and it's just gone, totally gone. It's a plot. It looks like a garden plot. So I'm not sure exactly what happened. We do updates on dumps periodically, so eventually we'll let you know. But but that was one that got a lot of attention and apparently got the city officials to start talking about ways to try to clean up these properties, which is always good.
Yeah.
And I have heard a lot of anecdotes from people who say, after you wrote about this place, it got cleaned up, you know, which is great.
That
you
is
know?
Cool.
So
yeah.
it can be a force for good.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times, I mean, in every neighborhood, there's a house like that or a building that kind of, there's folklore around it for kids and like that it's a haunted house or other things. So it's interesting to have it investigated. And
there's been some scary ones.
Yeah.
I've been scared a few times.
So are you able to actually go inside of the houses and walk around?
Generally not, yeah. No. But, you know, some of them, like, are so overgrown and just creepy. And, you know, you try to look under things and what's under the porch. You know, I find, like, you know, there's animal bones and skeletons and stuff. And that's never fun. Plus, you're scared of ticks, you know.
So, Chris, in the May issue of The Bollard, there's an article cornered by Doug Bruins focusing on the individuals who panhandle on the streets of Portland.
Yeah.
So the article exposes five individuals who are all struggling to get by and to find jobs. How do you think panhandlers and the homeless are perceived by Portlanders? How do you think, what do you think about their kind of like, is it becoming an issue? Is it?
It's definitely gotten people's attention. I mean, I would say as a community, we're kind of split 50-50 between the people who are like, I'm not going to give them any money, they don't deserve it, or this is wrong, and then the people who are actually giving them money. You know, and that's why they're there in such numbers, is because they've figured out that you can make a significant amount of money by doing this. And people are giving them money, clearly. So, you know, that's happening. So I think I'd say it's probably about 50-50. You know, I'm just guessing. But it's definitely, the community is split on it.
Yeah.
And everyone's noticed the greater visibility. I don't know, you know, the numbers have also increased, I think, in general. But, of course, that's what we're really talking about, is how visible the homeless are panhandling.
Yeah, I think that in the summers it always is more noticeable because people in the winter tend to go down south. But I know that it's partially because Maine does such a good job with trying to take care of these people, but there's some controversy over where they should be allowed to panhandle and regulations on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in the article, it tends to focus, the five people that were interviewed were definitely pretty tragic figures and kind of unexpected. They seemed like pretty normal people, and I don't know if that represents the group at large, but it is definitely important to keep that in mind, that these aren't all people who have drug problems, and even the people who do have drug problems, you know, are still sympathetic figures. So
I mean, that's in the same issue as well, the current issue. There's an op-ed by a homeless man who is talking about spice and the synthetic marijuana and how that has caused a lot of people who ordinarily wouldn't panhandle to start panhandling. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a whole another subgenre there who are doing this for this fake pot.
Right.
But yeah. It's definitely going to give, it's already gotten people talking, as our articles usually do. You know, there's going to be a lot of debate, as you mentioned, about the programs. Are they too generous? And, you know, so forth. And that conversation is going to continue. You know, I don't think there's going to be any solution anytime soon. But, yeah.
So in The Bollard, you obviously, in that article, for example, you had five individuals who you selected. So how... as your job as editor, how do you kind of, I want to say, encapsulate the community of Portland into, you know, more narrow articles? Or what's the process of taking the whole community and kind of condensing it into an article or a paper?
Yeah. Well, when Doug Bruns approached me about doing this project, one of the things I said is that I'd like him to get a array of different sorts of people.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look, because, you know, there are so many. If you're only going to pick five, you know, you want to try to get some representatives of different groups and so forth. Because otherwise it can come across as kind of distorted, like, oh, they're all white guys, or, you know, they're all old women or something.
Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah, basically from there, he just went out and picked them himself. And another thing that, you know, he and I talked about was the fact that a lot of times, you know, we didn't follow them up and, like, you know, research all their stories. Are they really from Minneapolis? That sort of thing. And we have to phrase it in such a way as to say, they say, they said, they said, you know, this is their story. You know, the homeless are kind of notorious for not always giving you all the information and, you know, the things that they may be hiding. So it's basically them in their own words. It's like you might chat them up on a street corner.
Yeah.
And Doug took all the photographs as well. He's a photojournalist.
Yeah, those are really cool pictures as well. I just want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show, and the number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. Right now we're interviewing Chris Busby, who is the editor and publisher of The Bollard.
So just talking about The Bollard in general, do you think that there's, I mean, we're talking about Portland as a community, do you think there's a wide range of people who read The Bollard? And so when you're writing your articles, are you catering towards certain groups of people, or are you kind of trying to find a balance?
Yeah. No, The Bollard is read really widely. There are people who are, you know, well into their 70s and 80s who, you know, especially like the crossword, or they've got different parts that they like. Young people like yourselves are picking it up. We're not tailored to any specific group of people. Like, for example, the Portland Phoenix seems to be a little more youth-oriented. Something like a Portland Magazine or Maine Magazine is for rich people. You know, we don't have, like, this kind of target demographic. And because it is free and widely available, yeah, everyone, you know, kind of picks it up. So we get a really wide array. And in terms of, you know, that as an audience, yes, I don't tailor any of the stories specifically toward any demographic. It's just more anyone who's interested in what's going on around town and in general, the general reader, I would say. Yeah.
Cool. I know that more focused on the kind of panhandling part of this recent Bollard. There seems to be a stigma about homeless people and that they're either mentally ill and dangerous or using drugs or simply lazy. And obviously these stories they do show a wide range of the type of people, but they seem like pretty harmless individuals. And I was just wondering how citizens of Portland can help without endangering themselves, or even more, how can the image of these people shift from fear to compassion?
Yeah. Well, I think if you do want to, you know, the best way to help people who are homeless is to support the shelters and the nonprofits that provide them with services. I think, you know, just handing them cash on the street corner, you don't know if that's going to feed an addiction or, you know, how that's going to be used. You just can't know. Whereas, you know, the money that you give to Preble Street Resource Center, for example, is not going to be spent on cigarettes, you know. So I think that's really an important way to do it. And I think in terms of just changing the public's attitude toward that, yeah, we do need to have more opportunities for the homeless to express themselves and to, you know, have an opportunity to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. You know, the Bollard's, proud to do a little bit here and there as we can, but, you know, maybe there's another way for them to get the word out. You know, some of homeless communities, I know in Boston and other large cities, they have like their own newsletter called Spare Change or other names and so forth. So, you know, that could be a good way to get some, you know, kind of humanize their situation. I would suggest something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anyone happens to pick up a copy, I mean, right now, the current issue, it has a pretty profound picture with the article on it, and it's a homeless man holding up a sign. So when you write, there are these hard-hitting, like, profound articles about, you know, the interworkings of Portland. Then there's also the Portland that's tourism-centered and the Portland that people read about or hear about. We actually have a little blurb here from the New York Times that I could read. It's from an article by Lionel Beener. It's called 36 Hours in Portland, Maine. This was from 2010, but I guess it's still pretty prevalent. Saying Portland, Maine is known for three L's: lobster, lighthouses, and L.L. Bean. Here's another, local. In recent years, the city on the coast of Maine has welcomed a wave of locavore restaurants, urban farms, and galleries that feature local artists. Abandoned brick warehouses are being repurposed as eco-friendly boutiques. In the main square, a 19th-century building has been refashioned into a farmer's market. And everywhere you look, this once sleepy industrial town is showing signs of rejuvenation, usually by keeping things local. So what are your thoughts on that, Chris?
I'm shocked that the New York Times let something like that by. We don't have any lighthouses. B, L.L. Bean is not in Portland.
Yeah.
And C, you know, we don't have any big brick warehouses, well, other than, you know, maybe the lawyer building. But that was before that was written. But anyway, that's really sloppy fact-checking by the New York Times. That's my first impression. But, you know, in general, yeah, I think I'm actually one of the founding board members of the Portland Buy Local Group, the nonprofit that got started to do that campaign. And it's been, you know, really successful. And I think that's a big part of what makes Portland a place people want to visit, is because it's full of local shops. It's not the same stuff that you'd see in any mall when you come to visit. So it is a place where locally owned independent businesses can and do thrive. And I think the Times is right on with that. You know, that is something you don't see in other cities around the country oftentimes. You know, it's like what a disappointing experience it is to go to some cool new city and to just see, oh, there's Starbucks and, you know, J. Crew and the same stuff that's everywhere. And Portland is really unique in that sense. And the community supports it. You know, they do buy local. They do support the local businesses. That's why they're still around.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen the kind of creep by the chains that other communities have. So hopefully that'll continue.
Chris, what do you think about, I mean, we're talking about local businesses in Portland. What do you think about chains? Like, I know the Five Guys downtown, the Starbucks, they just built another
one. Oh, yeah, there's a new Starbucks.
Yeah.
We have so many local coffee businesses. It's surprising that they are able to thrive so well, considering we have, like, three different Starbucxes.
Yeah, with the whole...
A lot of people, you see it when the cruise ship passengers disembark, you know, they want to go someplace that they're familiar with, they're comfortable with, they know what it tastes, you know, they're like, I know I want burnt-tasting coffee. I'm going to Starbucks. But, no, you know, I'm not a fan of the chains. You know, I think Five Guys makes a good burger, but, you know, it's there's plenty of other places in the Old Port to make excellent burgers as well. And I am encouraged that, you know, we haven't seen, you know, more of this kind of creep than we have. There's been some, and I think there's been talk over the years about trying to ban chains or limit them or so forth. And even though I've been very involved with the Buy Local group, I've never been in favor of that approach. You know, I just think that, you know, everyone should still compete and try to, you know, try their best to win the customer's dollar. But in general, I don't really support change as much, you know, as much as I can help it. And and I found that it's the quality's still good, the prices are right, you know.
I know there's a dispute maybe like a year ago when the Urban Outfitters opened about whether or not that would detract from business of other, you know, other businesses like Club 21, which recently did actually end up closing. I don't know if it was related to the competition or otherwise, but so I mean, there's definitely it draws people who aren't from Portland, and it also, you know, it's for some people it's convenient, like you said, it's familiar. But do you think that having these chains, I mean, do you think it's worth it if tourists are going to be able to come and feel comfortable? Or do you think it's, you know, we should be 100% enforcing that local kind of vibe that Portland has?
Yeah, you know, again, I would not say that we, you know, as a community should do anything in particular, like with legislation or ordinance or banning or limiting chains in that sense. I just think you got to let the free economy, you know, free market run its course that way. And, you know, if you do care about having locally owned independent businesses around, all you have to do is shop at them. You know, that's how you support them. So everyone has a choice. They can make that choice.
Yeah. I mean, I do my fair share of going to Starbucks, but I think that, I mean, I go to Arabica once or twice a week, and it's always busy in there. You know, they do such a good job, and I think that our local businesses are all pretty well run, and the ones that are well run stay afloat. So,
yeah, definitely, yeah. And if you know, if you're local and you're doing a crummy job, you know, just because you're local doesn't mean that you should stick around. You know, so.
Yep.
But we're lucky. I mean, you know, we still have a bookstore in town. We have a video store in town, and that are locally owned and independent. And that's really something, because there aren't many around even nationally now.
Yeah.
Record stores as well, Bull Moose. Yeah.
And even, I mean, this is kind of, but even in South Portland, the mall, that was a lot of chains, but they're kind of bringing in like Karma Sutra they brought in
the
food court.
Yep.
Yeah. That's all to the good.
Yeah. Kind of like meshing the two together to kind of create a balance. Yeah.
There is a demand. People, you know, do want locally owned independent stuff. There's a demand for that for sure, and people respond to that.
Yeah. Actually, right now we have a feature by Matt Osman, and it is about riding the bus in Portland.
I've experienced a lot on the city buses over the years, and I've become an expert because I take the city buses every day and every morning. I'm in junior high school. I really like the buses. And in fact, I know so much about the bus schedule that a local commercial radio show invited me on the radio to talk about the city buses. I know where they go, and even the buses I do not take, I still know the location where they are headed. There are a lot of ways to find a bus schedule. You can find them on a bus or on the Metro website, or at the Metro Pulse, or lots of other convenient locations. It's interesting riding the bus. Sometimes my bus runs late because of the traffic or construction going on the roads. Another time, the bus went right by a big police operation there was a standoff between police and the guy who was keeping someone hostage in one of the buildings. And also, one time I saw a pack of cigarettes on the bus, and I told the bus driver I saw them on the floor. And when I told him, he picked up the pack of cigarettes, he threw them in the trash so it would not cause a fire hazard on the bus. I also noticed the transportation system has passed a law about non-harassment, non-bullying, and non-discrimination policy. I think these rules are good because they are helpful to other people, and if someone is breaking the rules on the bus and then something happens, the bus driver would have to pull over, maybe call 911. And sometimes when I take the number 4 bus that goes to Westbrook, it is very crowded because a lot of people live in Westbrook, Maine. I want to encourage everybody to ride the Metro buses so they can get to wherever they are going and enjoy the bus like I do. For Blunt, this is Matt Osman.
Okay, so that was a feature by a Blunt member, Matt Osman, about buses. So we're here talking with Chris Busby. Chris, what did you think of that? Do you think that the bus system in Portland is efficient? Do you think there should be changes done to make it more efficient?
Or? Yeah, I think there can probably be some adjustments made to the schedule to make it easier and more convenient for folks. I know my city councilor, Kevin Donahue, has been very involved in metro issues and has some suggestions and has some different plans in mind for a metro. So I'm confident that he's taking a look at that stuff on our behalf, at least as terms of peninsula dwellers, and that they'll make the changes they need if they can.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Chris,
for having me, being
on the show. That was Chris Busby. He is the editor and publisher of The Bollard and a columnist for the Bangor Daily News. The Bollard is a monthly magazine about local news, music, and food. And this show is Portland Behind the Scenes. Now we'll head into break. Thank you.
Kick at a pillow till it makes you tired. Bummed out my whole pack and I gave my fire on the fire. Emptied my pockets, these empty pockets. Emptied my pockets and I waited for your call. Laid on the pavement, down on the pavement. Laid on the pavement with my ear against the wall. Stood on the mountain, up on the mountain. Stood on the mountain and I called your name. Savior, I am no savior, I am no savior, I am only your dog, and I'm all tied up, see how I'm tied up, my wrists are bound, I am the boat on your dock, I am the boat on your dock. Some bird turned light. knock some time off the clock. Kill the night, untie my knots all tangled up. Let's knock some time off the clock. Kill the night, untie my knots all tangled up. Let's knock some time off the clock. Untie my knots all tangled up. Emptied my pockets, laid on the pavement, stood on the mountain and I called your name. Empty your pockets, lay on the pavement, stand on the mountain, hear how I call your name.
Tonight, partly cloudy this evening, then becoming mostly cloudy, areas of dense fog. Visibility 1/4 mile or less at times, lows in the lower 40s, south winds around 10 miles per hour this evening, becoming light and variable. Tuesday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then clearing, areas of dense fog in the morning with visibility 1/4 mile or less at times. Highs in the mid-60s, light and variable winds, becoming south 10 to 15 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night, mostly clear in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Patchy fog, lows in the mid-40s, south winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Wednesday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming partly sunny. Patchy fog in the morning, highs in the upper 60s, light and variable winds becoming southeast 10 to 15 miles per hour in the afternoon.
You're listening to WMPG and W281AC Gorham, Portland.
Hi, you're listening to Blunt Youth Radio. This show is about Portland, behind the scenes. This is a call-in show, just so everyone knows. Our number is 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. We really want to hear what you think about Portland, so give us a call.
McCray Hathaway is the office manager at the State Theater in Portland, Maine. McCray has been working in the music business for a while, and he has produced concerts for such artists as The Books, Marco Benevento, and more.
Hi, McCray.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you so much.
So, McCray, what compels artists and musicians to come to Portland to perform?
I think that initially people don't really realize that Portland's such a music hub. Coming here, I've only been here for 2 years, but coming here initially, I didn't realize how much local music there is and how much opportunity there is for music, for live music and stuff like that. And once people get here and realize the reaction that they receive from people in Portland, they never want to stop coming back. I think that people realize, you know, people always think that Boston is kind of the farthest north that people are going to go on tour and everything, but then they come here and realize what a better crowd it is, for lack of better terms.
Yeah, I was just wondering what sort of performances have been the best received among the Portland community and what most popular performances?
It really depends. I mean, like, I've realized that people really enjoy seeing local artists and they really like to support their, you know, their own people, I guess. But also, what I've noticed is artists that you would never expect to come to Portland, I mean, obviously, are the ones that get the best response.
Yeah.
You know, artists like when we had the Flaming Lips at the State Theater, when we had Jane's Addiction or the Pixies, people kind of freaked out and didn't realize that they can make it up here. So yeah, that's obviously the ones that people really enjoy.
So, how do you see the music scene in Portland expanding or evolving? I mean, you talk about all these kind of big name artists coming into Portland. Is that relatively new? And if so, why do you think that they're kind of migrating over to the...
I can't really say if it's relatively new since I'm relatively new to the scene. But from what I understand, kind of the Cumberland County Civic Center was like the big place to play, and it still is in certain respects. But since the state has reopened, I think that that's kind of become the hub of music in Maine. And since, you know, we're going to hit 3 years in October, and it's pretty crazy seeing the artists that first started playing the state, and then to have somebody like Beck, who never tours, is coming in August. You know, it's crazy to see the artists, like, as we've progressed and working with different people. So, again, the Civic Center is still obviously in play for bigger shows like Carrie Underwood or something like that. But but I think that artists really like playing at places like the State Theater. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about, you already have mentioned a couple times the local music scene and how popular that is. I know that there are a lot of bands that do really well here, who are even just starting out. But I was wondering what exactly, like, what are the most popular genres for the local bands that you've noticed? I mean, I don't know how much.
What I've noticed, I don't know. One thing that I definitely have noticed is at the Big Easy, there's the weekly rap night, which I know is always super successful. The guys who run that, who are with Ill by Instinct and stuff, are super, super good at what they do, and people love being at rap night. But also, you know, I don't like saying indie rock, but kind of the indie yeah. rock scene is pretty big, you know, with like Jeff Beam and you know, like Foam Castles, and even to the point of like the poppier stuff like Spencer Albee. That's kind of what I've found has really stuck out in town. But they're like weird groups as well that only go to metal shows, which is great because, yeah. you know, like people, I'm glad that people are enjoying that and like people are able to see it in town because you can see any kind of show you want here.
Yeah.
You know, that there's no boundaries.
Yeah. So, I mean, there definitely is a lot of local music going on in Portland. Do you think that it's, are there many opportunities for local musicians, or do you think that, I mean, obviously it's difficult to find gigs and to go through the whole process, but do you think Portland is a relatively welcoming?
I definitely do. Again, like, I don't want to do like kind of a self promotion, but the band that I'm in, Whale Oil, we, you know, again, I've only been here for 2 years, and we've already been given so many opportunities from so many different people to play shows. And, you know, we're still so new on the scene, and people are so welcoming to let us play and stuff like that. So I really think that, you know, even the old school musicians are super welcoming, and you know, everybody's happy to play with everybody as long as it's, you know, local and, you know, support your brothers, I guess.
Yeah, cool. We actually have a caller.
Oh.
Greg from Portland.
Hey, Greg.
Hello? Are you there, Greg?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
So, right now we're discussing the local music scene. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, yeah, actually, you guys called me a little earlier, and you were asking me to be on the air with Chris Busby.
Yes. We have a new guest right now. We have McCray Hathaway from State Theater. And we are talking about the local scene. And we were just wondering, I know that you have had to do with Grime Productions. And
that's correct.
What kind of local bands are you working with?
What am I interested in for a local band?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess a lot of the stuff that I'm into, I don't really see too much around here. You know, I mean, I like all kinds of dirty rock and roll and heavy metal and stuff, or just like psychedelic rock.
Great. Cool.
Have you checked out Whale Oil yet?
What's it called?
Whale Oil?
Whale Oil? I've never heard of them, no.
Keep your eyes out. Sorry, shameless plug.
All right. Well, where can I catch Whale Oil?
We have our album release at Port City Music Hall on June 14th, so you can check us out there.
June 14th, okay, where is that? You got a show, is that what you said?
Yeah, at Port City Music Hall.
Port City Music Hall, okay, I will be there.
Great, again, sorry for the shameless plug.
Well, thank you for calling in, Greg, from Portland.
For sure, yeah, Have a good night.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So, McCray, you're in a band.
Sorry, we got on topic. He said dirty rock and roll, so I had to drop it a little bit. Sorry.
How long have you guys been playing music, your band?
About a year and a half. Mm-hmm. We're kind of a power trio, and
yeah,
just love playing wherever we can.
Yeah. So I guess you could have kind of like a personal kind of what to say about kind of local bands in Portland and getting gigs and kind of the what the reaction is from the community. Do you think that people, you said Portland embraces local music, so have you found that to be true?
Definitely. And again, Portland definitely embraces new local music as well. I've been super blessed to be friends with some people, like Ryan Dolan, who worked at the Empire, and a couple other people. So they've really helped us out in getting gigs and stuff. But everybody's been super receptive and super enthusiastic to have a new voice in town and stuff. So it's been great to play with everybody. So
by the way, this is a call-in show. So if you want to call us and let us know what you think, right now we're talking to McCray Hathaway, and he is from the State Theater. He's the office manager. This is a show, Portland Behind the Scenes. And please call us. Our number is 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. If you have an interest in local music, give us a call.
Okay. McCray, I know that musicians obviously bring a lot of culture into Portland, but how does Portland influence local musicians?
It's a stumper.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like any town, any small, I mean, you know, in comparison to a city, Portland's kind of a small town, and it has such personality. Portland has such personality that it definitely inspires everybody. And to be around so many musicians is definitely inspiring as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with us. Again, this was McCray Hathaway. He's the office manager at the State Theater. We're going to be taking a shift talking about the food culture in Portland. But thanks so much, McCray. This was great.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thank you. So, hi. So, I guess we're having a little bit of... Okay, I guess we're having a little bit of difficulties with the clip. Anyways, right now we're talking with Carly Milkowski.
Milkowski.
And she's from Wayside Soup Kitchen. She is the resource manager at the Wayside Food Programs in Portland, Maine. The mission of Wayside is to increase access to food for those in need in southern Maine by providing a system for community-based volunteers who serve prepared meals where such meals are needed, and by collaborating with other hunger agencies and community stakeholders in developing an efficient network for the collection and equitable distribution of food. Hi, Carly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Firstly, we were wondering what resources are available in Portland for poor and low-income families, just in general, what can be done for those people?
I work at Wayside Food Programs, and we have a number of programs that we do, and I can speak more about the kind of resources that are available in relationship to food than other resources. But Wayside has a few different programs that we run. We have a community meals program. So we are preparing and serving meals every week. We have a huge group of volunteers that help us do this work. And we serve those meals for free at host sites in Portland and Westbrook. We have 7 meals a week that we serve. We usually, I think we do about 500 meals a week through that program. And then in addition to that, Wayside also provides food to other food pantries and soup kitchens and other social service agencies and resource centers through our food rescue program. So we're out collecting donations of food and bringing them back and redistributing those resources all over the county.
So, yeah, you mentioned the food rescue program, and that kind of ties into establishments outside of Wayside food programs. I know you guys have a lot of food drives, like at Whole Foods and stuff like that. How do other organizations or establishments support Wayside? How do, you know, just in the community as a whole, how is there kind of like a connection between Wayside and other places?
Wayside is... Wayside in general, the hunger relief efforts in Portland, I think, are really a community-supported system. So we have donations that we receive all the time, 7 days a week, and they come from area businesses, large and small. We get donations from, you know, local farmers. We have Girl Scout troops that grow produce for us. And then on, kind of on the other side of the scale, we have big donations coming in from places like Hannaford and Whole Foods Market. So local grocers, bigger food producers and suppliers as well. Oakhurst, Moo Milk, those are some of our bigger ones.
Cool. I just want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. The number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And we are calling, we are talking right now to Carly Milkowski, who is the resource manager at Wayside Food Programs in Portland. This is the Portland Behind the Scenes show.
So, Carly, what are some ways people might be able to help those who are lacking in resources in Portland? I mean, just in terms of volunteering at Wayside food programs, have you seen, like, is it generally a large group of people who want to volunteer? Or, you know, what does that kind of look like?
The work that we do at Wayside is really, really supported by our volunteers. We have a small staff. There are 8 of us on staff. Only 4 of us are full-time. And so we're distributing close to 2 million pounds of food a year. So obviously 8 of us cannot physically move that much food or cook it, to say the least. So we really rely on our volunteers to help us do the work that we do. And that, I think, goes for the other food pantries and programs that we work with as well. Many of the local food pantries in Portland and throughout the rest of the county are actually entirely run by volunteers. So their directors are volunteers, the people picking up the food, redistributing it. So there are definitely opportunities to get involved with hunger relief efforts in the community through volunteering.
Yeah. So, I mean, speaking of the community, we have a feature right now we're going to play. It's by a Blunt member, Jules Fanard, and he actually went to the Boys and Girls Club in Portland, and he interviewed them. So let's listen to that.
Across Cumberland Avenue from Portland High School is this wide brick building. Many people know it's the downtown Portland Boys and Girls Club, but fewer know about its service to the youth and how important that is. I know because I've been a member for 11 years. I would never have thrived just growing up at my house. My friend Carl, who's been a club member for 12 years since he was 7 years old, knows how important the club is. Why do you come here to the Boys and Girls Club?
Well, you know, Jules, I just like the environment, people around here, you know, they make it fun and good place to work on my basketball skills, you know, drills, my main sport. Love to do it, motivates me for everything, the weight room and, you know, people around just make it fun to be.
The club has helped me with homework and offered me a home for me to be myself. I learned how to be more mature, have fun, and how to swim better, while getting opportunities to travel out of state, hike, camp, read, act, create art, cook, garden, lead, and so much more. The moment I walked in, I was welcomed and encouraged by staff who dedicated part of their time to guide me and watch me grow. Allison is one of the staff members who stuck by me and many other members over her time at the club. What is it that you do to make sure that you keep the members occupied here at the Boys and Girls Club?
I try to make it fun. I try to do different activities to encourage them to read and do various educational activities. I offer prizes and incentives, and occasionally we just have fun games.
Why do you come to work here at the Boys and Girls Club?
I really enjoy working here. I mean, it's a job and it pays, but I also really feel like I'm making a difference and like I'm helping people, and I really like that.
What would you say your favorite thing is about being here at the Boys and Girls Club?
Some of those moments where I see a kid actually make a big difference, like one kid that, you know, doesn't like to read, that I then find very excited to be getting a book or excited to be doing something, to be learning something. That's just the best.
The club gave me so much that I decided to give back. I helped when I could with anything. I work there, and now I volunteer there. Brian has been a staff member for 13 years. It's what he did that set an example for me to carry on my service. Why do you come to work here at the Boys and Girls Club?
I guess part of it goes back to the fact that I was a club member here. And my first day as a club member, I saw that the staff members here have what I call the best job in the world. And I still feel that it's the best job in the world. They get to hang out with the club members all day and play games. But there's a lot more to it than just playing games. If I'm playing a game with a teenager, I'm also talking to them, getting to know them. Who their family members are, who their friends are, how school is going for them. So I guess my job is also just to be a friend and a set of ears to any teenager that shows up here that needs someone to talk to or they need help with something, whatever the teens need. Sometimes I'm a friend, sometimes I'm a mentor. Sometimes I have to be the one to sort of come down on the teenager and when I recognize that they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing or that they're not working as hard as they could be doing. So I wear lots of different hats here in the teen room.
What's something that you feel that you think should improve in the Boys and Girls Club?
One thing that we can improve on in the Boys and Girls Club, I would say, is promoting the Boys and Girls Club. Our fee has always been, ever since I've been here from 1990 as my first day as a club member, it's only $5 a year to use the Boys and Girls Club. And that $5 will cover you for 12 months, and it allows you the use of an indoor pool, two gymnasiums, a learning center, a computer room, a games room, an arts and crafts area. I mean, we have all of these tools that we can utilize, and it's only $5 a year for the members to take advantage of. When I'm in the neighborhood and I see someone between the ages of 7 and 17 that I don't know, I'm always thinking to myself, well, why doesn't that person go to the Boys and Girls Club? And so because I still live close by, I want to make sure that every single person that is within the ages of the club that can come here knows about the club and knows about what we have to offer.
I now share the staff's passion to see children grow and learn, knowing what it meant to me. For Blunt Youth Radio, this is Jules Fennard.
So that was a feature by Jules Fennard, and it was about the Boys and Girls Club and how they're helping the community. We're also speaking with Carly Milkowski from Wayside Food Programs, which is another organization that helps the community of Portland. So earlier when we were talking to Chris from the Bollard about this article Cornered, where it's Portland traffic panhandlers, basically, and we were talking about people who have signs on roads. Should we give them money, or how do we help without, you know, what will the money go towards? So what, Carly, are some ways that we can help in relation to Wayside Programs? What can I do or any other person do that will help get people the resources they need?
In terms of trying to help people make ends meet and get food on their tables, I'd say there are a lot of ways that you can help in this community. Like I was talking about earlier, there are a lot of volunteer opportunities, whether it's with an agency like Wayside or another local food pantry or Pebble Street Resource Center. These programs are really supported by the volunteers that help there. The other thing that I mean is huge for us at Wayside is just getting food into our warehouse, into our kitchens, whether that's by doing a food drive or there's a great program through the University of Maine Cooperative Extension called Harvest for Hunger. So I know it's people are starting to think right now about planting their gardens now that we finally had some nice spring weather out there. So if you're thinking about that and kind of considering what you're going to plant,
throw some vegetables in there and donate them to one of your local agencies. Wayside's happy to receive donations Monday through Friday of fresh produce. You know, we prefer to give out fresh, healthy stuff to people who come to utilize our programs.
Yeah, that's great. So what compelled you to work with Wayside Food Programs?
I've been working with food for a number of years. I've worked in restaurants and at farms you know, around food for quite a long time. And I came to Portland about 3 years ago and started working at Wayside through the AmeriCorps program that the Goodwill Northern New England runs. And so I was placed at Wayside. AmeriCorps is just, it's a great program, you know, both for nonprofits who are looking to get, you know, the help that they need, especially with small budgets and small staffs. Also for me, it was a great experience to be able to gain skills, and kind of firsthand experience in the nonprofit setting and being able to do some work that really meant something to me.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you feel, and especially, I mean, I know it sounds like you started doing this type of work in particular when you were became to Portland. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So were you particularly inspired by Portland, or what was it that made you go from kind of the food side to more helping people?
I was definitely inspired by Portland. I knew I wanted to come here before I had the AmeriCorps position at Wayside. And I also knew that wherever I ended up, and was really looking at coming to a small city with a vibrant community like Portland, that I wanted to do something active in the community.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So it looks like we're running out of time on our show.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Carly Mikulski. She is the resource manager at Wayside Food Programs in Portland, Maine. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Chris Busby, the Ballard Editor-in-Chief, and McCray Hathaway, the Office Manager of the State Theater. Thanks to our engineers, Trenton Johnson, Izzy Tarantino, Sarah Gale, my co-host.
And Ava Zulinski.
Thank you. And so up next is jazz.
Thank you for listening to Blunt.